Money FM 89.3, best of the breakfast huddle.
We are going to turn our attention to the month of June as we start off this brand new month of July, second half of the year, third quarter. And as always, you know, we get a good friend of ours to help us take a look at the market winners and losers. David Cole, co-founder of The Smart Investor, is on the line with us. David, good morning. How are you?
I'm very good, Elliot. How are you?
Not too bad, sir. I suppose let's start off, as usual, by going through some of the highlights of the month of June. Ryan, let's start off with you.
Well, mine would have to be the lifting of dining-in restrictions.
Oh, yes.
I remember the relief that I had, the sense of liberation, just sitting at a table, having my lunch of grilled fish.
Oh, that sounds good.
That's something you can't take away.
That is great. That is great. For me, it was the start of Euro 2020. A year late, but better late than never. David, what about you?
Well, mine was actually a story that came out yesterday, and it concerned the first ever flying car.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, well, I mean, it really excites me. I mean, I suppose as far as flying is concerned, you know, it's not really something on people's minds at the moment. But this car managed to stay in the air for half an hour, and it flew between two airports in Slovakia. And just think about it. You can get this car. It takes about two minutes for the car to convert from an ordinary sports car into a flying machine. And the wings come out and the tail comes up. And then you can actually sort of drive along, take off, and then go to wherever you want. But at the moment, it only stays in the air for about half an hour. But for me, it's quite exciting.
Yeah, it is. I'm going to have to agree. Quite stylish design as well. Can imagine yourself pretending to be James Bond in that
car. Of the Jetsons.
Or the Jetsons. Okay. Oh, dear. Everyone's showing their age on this show. Okay, David, let's get into the business end of things. China. They are celebrating their 100th anniversary of the founding of the Chinese Communist Party, and we are expecting some kind of a fanfare. Not a lot of details. We know there's a flypast. We know there's a presidential address. I mean, let's talk about the CCP. I mean, how has the party fared in driving economic growth?
I would say it's been quite impressive, Elliot. If you have a look at what has been happening, I mean, we don't have data going back 100 years as far as China is concerned, but we can probably start from around the time of Deng Xiaoping, because he was ultimately the guy that reformed China. And during his reign, well, during his period of 10 years, China's economy grew by 133%. I mean, that is really quite impressive for any country to expand that quickly. But that pales in comparison to the next leader of China, Jiang Zemin. During his term, China's economy expanded 273%, right? So he beat Deng Xiaoping. The man who came after Deng Xiaoping was Hu Jintao. Mm. During his period, China's economy expanded 500%. I mean, it really accelerated during Jiang Zemin's time. And I think that is really what woke people up and said, hey, you know, China is something at the moment. It could one day overtake America as the largest economy in the world. And then after Hu Jintao, we had Xi Jinping. And Xi Jinping's been in power for about 8 years now. And during his term, unfortunately, the economy only expanded 50%. So I think there's two takeaways from this. The first one is that it becomes increasingly more difficult for China to expand its economy at the same rate as it did in the past if it were to continue down the road of communism. If we have a look at how things have been in the past, it was really the opening up of China that that allowed the economy to expand. But what seems to have happened during the last 8 years is that China seems to be looking a bit more inwards at the moment, and that has seemed to have slowed down China's economic growth. I don't know if we can take any lessons away from this, but for me, there's two things. The first one is that if you want your economy to expand quickly, you probably need to embrace the kind of policies that were held by people like Deng and Deng Xiaoping and Hu Jintao, and allow China's economy to open up and expand and allow inward investments, and at the same time allow the economy to do what it is supposed to do, which is allocate capital properly. But the last 8 years has been a little bit disappointing for me, Elliot.
Okay. I mean, I'm glad you brought up Deng Xiaoping, because he's largely credited for this whole slogan and this whole mindset of putting China first, you know, where the Chinese people are concerned. And that's a large credit to how they managed to overcome the COVID situation so quickly and get their economy back on track. I mean, you brought up some really big headline numbers, but there is also this situation where China is trying to drive more inclusive or even more sustainable growth in that sense. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think it is very important, and I think it is vital when the economy becomes as big as China. I mean, if you're a small economy, what you do doesn't really affect anything that goes on in the world. But when you are as big as China, and it is the number two economy in the world right now, what you do has an impact on the world. And so, therefore, I think China is doing the right things as far as the environment is concerned. It needs to be concerned about what is going on around the world, because what it does has an impact on other people. And people do look to China and they say, if you do expand at the same rate as you've done in the past, then what is going to happen? What are the impacts of your policies on the rest of the world? And I think you raise a very good point, Elliot.
Hey, David, so you mentioned China's growth. So let's look at its market's performance in the first half of the year. If you look at the Shanghai Composite, it's up 3.4% for the first 6 months. Nearby, Hang Seng in Hong Kong is up 5.8% year to date. And this compares to the likes of the Dow, which is up 12.5%. So US markets really outperforming what's happening in China. And even Singapore markets, the STI is up 10% year to date. And across the causeway, Malaysia is down 5.8%. So if you look at all these major markets, how much does this reflect the impact of COVID-19 on their economies?
Well, I think what we can say about 2021 is that many of these markets rebounded back from what happened in 2020. But whenever I have a look at the halftime reports on stock markets around the world, I'm always reminded by football games, and I think both of you will appreciate this analogy. I mean, have a look at what happened in the France game. I mean, France was leading 3-1, and you would have thought that they would just cruise to the finishing line and qualify for the next round. But what happened? They lost two silly goals, and then they ended up losing the penalty shootout as well. And then they were dumped out of the Euro 2020. And I think what we need to do when we have a look at stock markets, you're absolutely right. I mean, the Dow, the Nasdaq, even over in the UK, the FTSE have done well in the first 6 months of this year. But what is going to happen in the next 6 months, you have to forget what has happened in the past and say we are where we are now and what the valuations look like. And I think the economy, the global economies are going to open up. I mean, what is actually quite telling was that the KLCI, just across the border from us, just across the causeway, I mean, it's had a terrible first half. I mean, it was one of the few markets around the world which was in the negative. And it just goes to show that if you don't handle this pandemic properly, you are going to be punished. And I think that is what has happened in Kuala Lumpur. I mean, the stock market was down about 5.8% in the first 6 months of this year, whereas the other stock markets around the world were doing very well, and people are looking forward, just as you were, for going out and dining again. People are looking forward to the reopening of economies, and maybe the second half is going to be as good as the first half of 2021. I'm keeping my fingers crossed for that anyway, Ryan.
Hey, David, yeah, it's true. You know, this pandemic is a marathon and it's all about preparedness. And on that note of preparedness, MAS is conducting more stress tests to figure out whether it's time to raise the cap on dividends. With that in mind, I do want to talk about how attractive bank stocks are now at current levels. For example, I mean, they've run up quite a bit. DBS, I put an example, up 19% year to date at over $29, P/E ratio of 16. Your thoughts on this?
Well, I think the regulator does need to have a look at whether or not banks will be allowed to resume the normal dividends prior to the pandemic. When we have a look at what has happened in America, they have certainly decided that the banks are strong enough now to resume share buybacks and to resume dividends at their own discretion. And so they're saying that banks, we think you are strong enough now. And I think the Singapore banks are in the same position. I mean, I don't think Singapore banks are in any worse a position than any other bank in the West, whether we're talking about Europe, the UK, or America. And I think that, yes, I think it is about time that the regulators re-looked at the dividend policies of banks and say that I think it was right to prepare for the pandemic. Mm. Absolutely. I don't have any doubts about that. It was right for them to say, you've got to be cautious. But I think what the banks have shown is that they are very resilient and they have been very responsible and they have acted properly. And I think as far as investors are concerned, and I own shares in all three Singapore banks, I think that it is about time that the regulator eased off a little and said the banks can resume the dividends. If that were to happen, Ryan, Elliot, then I think that the share price could have a lot further to go.
Just very quickly, before I hand it over to Ryan to talk about market winners and losers, super quickly, United Airlines went shopping, buying 270 planes. Is it too early to get excited about airline stocks?
Well, it's never too early to look forward to being able to travel again. And I think that is what everybody wants. I mean, this is the pent-up demand that people are talking about. You raise a very interesting point, Elliot, and that is that there is so much pent-up demand. I mean, poor old Ryan rushing out and having...
grilled fish.
Having his grilled fish. Yeah, I know. I mean, that is the kind of pent-up demand we're talking about. And I think there's going to be a lot of pent-up demand for travel as well. People don't like being locked in, you know, for a long period of time. And people want to go out, particularly over here in Southeast Asia. We want to go to Bali. We want to go to Malaysia. We want to go to Thailand and Cambodia. And, of course, had to be prepared for that. Mm. And I think the airlines are gearing up for this pent-up demand to be unleashed and people are going to start traveling again.
We're chatting with David Kuo. He's the co-founder of the Smart Investor. Interesting talk about airlines, SIA. Year-to-date is up 13.3%, and that is, though, seeing it down for the past 3 months. So it's seeing some pressure in recent weeks. So something to track, and let's take a bit of a step back and look at the first 6 months of the year, David. So STI, year-to-date, is up 10%. We've got 17 on the STI in the green for these 6 months, and this is partly lifted by banks, which are up 14 to 19%. So that is the picture we have for the first 6 months. And if you look at some of the top gainers, right at the top is Yangzhijiang Shipbuilding, up around 47%, followed by Sembcorp Industries and the Singapore Exchange. So let's dive into what's happening with Yangzhijiang. Why is there so much optimism behind this stock in the past few months?
Well, I think it is primarily because it's got a very strong order book. And certainly, I think the shipping industry, just as the airline industry, is saying that we think that there is going to be a rebound in trade, and consequently, we're going to be needing more ships out there in order to transport goods around the place. So I think that is primarily the reason why Yangzhijiang Shipping has done as well as it has. Will it go any further from here? I think this is probably about as good as it will get for Yangzhijiang Shipping, Ryan.
Okay. Of course, it did fall quite a bit in 2020. So a bit of a turnaround year for Yangzhijiang with what's happening with the economy as well. And if you look at what's happening in Sembcorp Industries, is that also a bit of a turnaround story there? Because they have tried to paint a new strategy going forward.
I think that new strategy is really what is driving the share price. At the moment, there are lots of investors out there who are looking for companies that have a focus on the environment. And I think Sembcorp Industries is certainly in the right place. And what seems to be happening there is that there is this this ESG premium, this environmental, social and governance premium that is being baked into Sembcorp Industries. And people are saying that you're doing the right thing. We're going to reward you with a higher valuation. But with a PE of about 27 at the moment, I think that could be about as good as it gets for Sembcorp Industries as well.
Yeah, Sembcorp Industries for year-to-date is up 25%. SGX is up 20% in the first 6 months. Is this as strong as can get? Because a lot of it was with retail traders getting back into the markets or joining the markets. Is that expected to continue in the second half?
I think it could very well do. I think as long as interest rates remain low, Ryan, I think that people are going to need to look for alternatives to putting their money in the bank. And there are very few better places than the stock market and looking for shares that provide you with a yield. I know people are talking about interest rate increases, but I don't see interest rate increasing as much as people would like. Mm. And so therefore, if you are looking for a home for your money, you're going to look for the stock market. Bonds don't seem to be doing that great, which is telling you that they don't think that interest rates are going to be rising as fast as people would like. So I think Singapore Exchange is going to do well, I think, in the second half of this year.
Okay, let's look at the bottom of the table, David. So worst performing STI shares in the first 6 months, right? At the bottom, Keppel DC REIT is down 11.4%. David, what's going on here? Because it seems like data centers would be the next big thing. Why is it under pressure?
Yeah, you're right. You would have thought that data centers would be the next big thing. And I think a lot of people thought about that in 2020. I mean, Keppel DC REIT did very well in 2020, primarily because of what you just said. But I think it's giving back some of those gains in 2021. And I think the other thing is that there are many countries right now beginning to wonder, how many data centers do we really need? I know here in Singapore, we have a moratorium on the number of data centers that can open in Singapore, simply because of the amount of power and the energy that is required. And if you put a data center here in Singapore, we're not the coolest place in the world in terms of temperature. And so therefore, these things, you know, consume a lot of power. They need a lot of cooling. And so Singapore is putting a slight moratorium on the opening of new data centers. And as far as Keppel DC REIT is concerned, maybe it's going to have to look somewhere else to try and sort of find suitable housing for data centers.
And David, one more to touch on. ThaiBev is down 8.2% in the first 6 months. And I would have thought that people would be drinking more beer in these times. And of course, looking ahead to the second half of the year, more economies reopening, maybe more restrictions being lifted. Is that going to be a good second half?
Yeah, drinking more beer unless you're Paul Pogba, yeah? I mean, Paul Pogba at that news conference where he replaced the two bottles of Heineken with something else. What he didn't realize, by the way, was that those two bottles were alcohol-free beer. He should have just left it where it was. But yeah, I think as far as ThaiBev was concerned, people are a bit disappointed that the IPO for its beer division didn't quite go ahead. And also, Thailand at the moment seems to be put on the back foot because of COVID-19, and not as many tourists are going into places like Bangkok. And so not surprising that ThaiBev was one of the poor performers in the first half, but let's look forward to the second half. You know, I'm a value investor, so I look for all those companies that haven't done well rather than those that have already done well.
Excellent stuff. Thank you so much for sharing your thoughts with us this morning. By the way, David, who are you supporting at Euro 2020?
I support any team that's got Chelsea players in it, right? So I was torn during the England-Germany game because there were three Chelsea players on both sides. I think at the moment, England seems to have the most number of Chelsea players, so I'm going to go for England right now.
Okay, the world according to David Kuo. David Kuo, co-founder of the Smart Investor, on the line with us. Thank you so much, David, for your time this morning. Take care and stay safe.
Thank you.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.